Rise, dear Meriden. The blood of Phyrexia shall soon complete you.
Welcome to episode 2 of Story Circle, where we examine the people, places, and themes of the magic multiverse. I'm Andrew, and you're David?
That's true, I am David. And I have to say, Argentum, I barely knew him.
What?
Yeah, that's the product of 30 minutes of trying to come up with a pun as good as your last one.
Okay. I accept your competition.
That's the best I could come up with.
I enjoyed it. So, this is a...
You might be the only one.
I might be. But, so, Argentum, that's the original name of Meriden, which happens to be the topic for this episode. Is that a coincidence?
No. Yes.
Yes, it is a coincidence. I thought so. I could tell. Okay, well, like I said, I'm Andrew, and he's David, and in this episode we're going to talk about Meriden, starting with the history of Meriden, its old storyline, and then following up with kind of some cards we picked out that talk about the Meriden storyline and comparing the old Meriden to, like, the new goings-on of the plane. To start out, we got some comments on our first episode. Most of them were good.
The Phyrexia episode.
Right, the Phyrexia episode. Get the podcast started out right. But we got some constructive feedback. Some people were not constructive. One person was not constructive. But, well, you know, that goes with the territory. A lot of people said something to the effect of, maybe we got some facts not straight.
Or butcherings.
Or butchered the facts. Either way. I mean, facts are all relative, right?
Yeah, that's what they say, I think.
That's the thing about facts. but we're storyline lovers. We didn't claim to be experts. So we don't enjoy being wrong. We don't try to be wrong. Feel free to correct us. But, you know, we're not... Yeah, we're not experts.
Yeah, if you correct us, or if you tell us we're wrong, you have to correct us is my
okay.
rule.
That's a good rule. So, we do some research, and we both know a lot to begin with. Not to say we're experts, we just, you know, happen to be enthused about the magic storyline, so we end up picking up a lot of details. Some of them might get mixed up. So, sorry. We try not to, but that also goes with the territory.
Yeah, do you want to spend a second just talking about how we get our facts, I guess? And I know we kind of do it differently.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead? You seem to have an idea of what you're talking about.
Well, sometimes. I mostly get my facts from getting summaries from the internet because I really like to read synopsises.
Sure.
And just reading the articles on wizards and things like that, but I don't actually read a lot of the novels, whereas I believe you do.
I do read the novels. The problem there being I don't have a good memory for them. So I'll randomly remember some facts and randomly blank out on entire, like, scenes and plot lines and whatnot. So, yeah, I do read a lot of the novels and a fair amount of the flavor text and the, you know, the articles that get posted. So, I own the Planeswalker's Guide to Alara, and I read that, for example, and Doug Bayer's articles. So, just things that get picked up or gleaned from the cards, you know.
Yeah, and I'm a big lover of flavor text. I especially love reading it during drafts. That's maybe why I go so slow.
Well, okay. Maybe I'll take a Sharpie to the cards in my cube and maybe we'll speed up a little bit. So, what have you been playing? Any Magic?
I haven't played a lot since last time.
Right.
Which was not a lot then either. But I do keep up with everything.
I played a Friday Night Magic draft. But other than that, I've been playing a lot in the classic room. The casual classic room online. I have 3 new decks. One of them is a black-red Crypt of Agadeem deck where I cycle and dredge myself just having a ton of creatures in my graveyard and then cast a big drain life.
Very nice.
One of them is blue-red where I use Galvanoth to reveal the top card of my library, which I scry or jace to be an epic spell from Kamigawa, like Eternal Dominion or Undying Flames.
Oh, those epic spells are really cool.
Yeah, and then I try to have like creatures on the battlefield that will copy it. So every upkeep, when I cast the cop or put the copy on the stack, then I can copy it with like my Mischievous Quanar and or Echo Mage. So I get like multiple copies of the epic spell during my upkeep.
Sounds a little bit like Johnny Speak to me.
I don't know what you're talking about. So those two decks are Johnny?
Well, what you just described to me much was.
Alright, so deck 3 is I mill with Hedron Crab myself into a bunch of auras and then cast Retether. So, like, turn 1 Hedron Crab and then Misty Rainforest, mill myself a bunch, mill into, like, Eldrazi Conscription and Mammoth Umbrell Armadillo Cloak and Celestial Mantle, and then turn 4 cast Retether and bring all those auras back onto my Hedron Crab or a plant token or a squirrel token, and then just attack with my huge, tiny creature.
I think there's some kind of fine for winning with squirrel tokens.
Well, I will have to pay it multiple times. One game, on turn 4, I retethered a bunch of auras back onto like a squirrel, including an Eldrazi Conscription. I attacked. My opponent sacrificed his 2 lands to Annihilator, keeping only a Howling Mine. Now, a lot of players would concede, but he decided to untap and then concede. So.
Oh, well, at least he did that on tap.
Yeah. So, it's not always that fast. But it's fun to try to resolve Retether. So that's what I've been playing. So if you haven't been playing, what have you been doing? Don't you spend a lot of time on MTG Salvation?
That's true. I spend a lot of time there. My name is Dodavahu there. I'm in the custom sets a lot, making pretend Magic cards instead of actually playing.
Yeah.
Which is probably a good use of my time, maybe.
Sure. I mean, compared to playing, like, I think it comes out even.
Yeah. I don't spend as much money, but I also don't get as much prizes or fame. You get fame for that, right? You're pretty famous.
I am not famous, in fact. Nor have I gotten any prizes from the classic casual room.
I might have to rethink my co-host, then.
Pick someone who makes better prizes?
Yeah.
Well, I got 5th place at that Friday Night Magic draft.
Oh, okay, well, you're back in.
Only the top 4 got prizes.
Oh, okay.
It was pretty exciting. So has anything cool been going on, making in the custom sets forum? Anything particularly dynamic?
There's this month's Ravnica Wedge set just came out. That happens about once a month. Someone makes one of those.
Oh, okay.
Pretty exciting.
Oh, okay. People are like, oh, man, I'm going to make a set, and it's going to be... Wait, I got an idea. It's going to be Ravnica, but with wedges?
Yeah.
And that happens every month?
Yeah, pretty much every month. And it's the brand new idea. They're really excited.
Right. That's cool.
Some of them are really good, though, but... It does happen a lot.
Nice work, everyone.
And you're making a set, too, aren't you?
I am, yeah. A couple weekends ago, I just spent, like, the whole weekend making all the commons and uncommons. for a large size set. And then, like, last weekend or something, I printed them all out on stickers with, like, in playtest style, like Wizards makes playtest cards. They look just like that. And I stickered them onto cards and played some drafts by myself, which is a very exciting and dynamic experience. And also got someone else to play with me at this shop. So, done some testing with that.
Did you win?
I did win, actually.
Oh, yeah. You just probably cheated.
I think I had an advantage going into it, having been intimately familiar with all the cards, whereas he had only read a few of them before starting.
Intimate, like cat people intimate, or?
You know what? That's a sensitive subject, because I know I said Kemba and I had been texting and kind of, you know, getting close, but we stopped talking. She just couldn't shut up about some guy named, something. I don't know. Some guy. Some other guy she kept talking about.
Some Ka.
Yeah, it's Ka. She couldn't shut up about him.
Man. Those girls need to be quiet about the Ka's.
Yeah.
They've always got Ka on the mind.
Raksha. It was Golden Cub this and Golden Cub that.
Okay.
I was like, listen, Kemba, this isn't working out. So, I read an article.
I thought you read novels.
I read novels and articles.
Just kidding, go ahead.
This is from Brian DeMars on Star City Games. He wrote an article talking about things you would change about Magic, things you'd like them to change. One of his points was about the use of literary text in flavor text on Magic cards. He was making the point that he thinks Magic should go back to using literary references on flavor text. He said, honestly, I couldn't possibly care less about what Glissa, Conda, or Jace have to say because I don't find them to be particularly interesting characters once they open their mouths and spout a bunch of bad cliches. Which I thought was interesting because it kind of brought up the question to me, like, does badly written flavor text reflect poorly on the characters to whom the quotes get attributed? Like, if I read something that's really cheesy and it says Jace said it, like, now do I not like Jace anymore?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Or can I say, like, I understand that the flavor text writer sucked here, and I'm not going to let that affect my opinion of Jace as a character.
Well, I would say it doesn't affect it too bad, although if you have enough bad quotes attributed to you, I'm probably not going to like you as much as a character.
That's true.
But a lot of it goes into if I like a character or not, like the how important they are to the storyline, their art, what their card actually does.
What color they are?
I'm not racist.
Oh. I am color pie racist. I'm not really into the reds.
I also dislike reds, actually.
Well, I guess that's why we like Phyrexia.
It's true. So far.
Because the reds are the holdouts. So,
anyway, back to DeMars.
Yeah, because, I mean, the other side of that is, come on, DeMars, pay attention to corsets. And no, I didn't mean, like, corsets. Like,
yeah, I have problems not paying attention to those.
Definitely give attention to the corsets. And the corsets. Because they have literary flavor text as recently as M11.
According to Aaron Forsyth, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, according to Diminish.
He tweeted.
Exactly, yeah. Like, in response to that article, Aaron Forsyth tweeted, DeMars did say, go back to putting real-world flavor text on cards. I say, go back to reading flavor text in corsets. Yeah. So
what do you feel about the literary use in flavor text.
I don't like them at all. I don't think they should get rid of them, because I think there are definitely people who appreciate them, but I think they need to stay in core sets.
See, I totally agree.
Okay.
This isn't a very good back and forth right now.
Yeah, I kind of hoped you would disagree there, but...
Sorry. But when I play Magic, I like to really get into the world that I'm playing in, and just like I'm a voracious Vorthos, so I like to really learn about what's going on with these different settings. And, I mean, since I was an English major, and I'm now an English major, and just like DeMars was, he said in his article, so I read literature all the time.
Yeah.
I can open a book. But when I play Magic, I'd rather hear what's going on there.
Yeah, I feel like as an English major, you should respect the continuity of the settings of Magic. Like, I mean, last episode I was talking about, I was worried about bringing, like, the Book of Machines or whatever, or the Tome of Machines into Mirrodin's Phyrexia, worrying about, like, is this a book that exists beforehand, or does it not exist, because it's all continuity, what needs to make sense, and having someone in on Mirrodin saying something from literary history is, you know, breaking that continuity.
Yeah, it's breaking the wall there.
Yeah, they're breaking the wall. Fourth wall, shattered. So, he says it makes cards more flavorful and interesting because by incorporating elements of other literatures or narratives, it creates added depth to the imagined fantasy world of Magic the Gathering. Which just seems opposite to me.
Yeah, I don't really understand where he's coming from.
I don't either. So, I mean, I guess I would be interested in hearing the other side, like if anyone can really comment on like that fourth wall or like why maybe you don't feel that's relevant or why you feel it's relevant but doesn't apply here. Like, so if you think something opposite, let us know, because I'm just curious at this point.
And we'll give you a prize.
We will?
Yeah, of saying your name.
Oh, right, that was the prize. Okay, shh.
That's our normal prize.
Right.
It's a standard.
Good, I like that. New standard.
Yeah, we have prizes to give out later, too, by the way. Or at least one.
Right. So...
probably talk about that next segment. The prize, I mean.
But okay.
We should probably get into talking about Mirrodin, right?
The main topic of this episode. Go.
Mirrodin.
Mirrodin, here we go.
Well, how excited were you when you heard that the new set was called Scars of Mirrodin?
Opposite of excited.
Oh, okay. Here's something we can go back and forth on then.
Okay.
Because I was really excited.
All right.
Because I really like going back to things, and Mirrodin was one of those times in Magic where I played a lot, and then somewhere in the middle of the block, I stopped playing. And so I had a really firm grasp of what was going on and what cards were happening around that era.
Okay.
Around the first Mirrodin. And when I heard we were coming back, I got really excited. Because there's all these planes, and these planeswalkers go to these different planes, but they never go back. It never makes sense to me.
All right. Yeah, I like the... when they first diverged from Dominaria, like, after... like, when they went to Oteria, which was on Dominaria, but felt like a totally new place, like, I respected that it was still Dominaria, but... like, it was new, and I didn't really... and then they just left Dominaria and, like, went to Mirrodin, and I was, like, sad because I liked Dominaria. But now, a few years later, they've gone to some really cool places. But Mirrodin, having been the first one, was not exciting to me because I just don't... I don't like Mirrodin. I don't like the metal. I'm not into metal. Like...
I thought that was, like, your favorite genre of music.
Metal? That's a coincidence? Opposite? It's anti-coincidence? Don't say anti-coincidence.
Only once per show.
Once per show. I've already said it twice. Crap.
I'll start over. Edit that out.
Welcome to Story Circle. This is episode 2. So, what's the story of the original Mirrodin? We've got Glissa and Memnarch and Slobad and the Levelers and Bosh.
It's true. All of those things happen.
Right.
Well, I guess the main protagonist was Glissa.
Right.
The elf.
From the Tangle.
The Tangled Elf.
Tangled Elf. What a tangled elf we weave.
Good one.
There's the fun.
I knew it was coming. Oh, I barely knew him.
Are we talking about Argentum again?
Yeah.
So, Glissa the protagonist and Memnarch the antagonist. The main war in the original Mirrodin storyline was Mirrodin versus Memnarch.
Was who versus Memnarch?
Mirrodin.
Yeah, basically. Sort of.
Basically, sort of. He had all the mirror and the levelers and whatnot.
It's true.
Like ravaging places.
And kind of the storyline was Glissa looking for who was behind everything wrong in her life.
Right.
Because it started off with the levelers kind of leveling Glissa's family.
I wonder what their level up cost is.
Bring them down to my level.
What? Level 3 plus. So, the levelers are not the same as Rise of Eldrazi levelers. Is that what we're saying?
True. They do not level up.
So if you're unfamiliar with the original Mirrodin, the levelers were huge machines. Big, scary things.
What did their card do? Didn't it just...
Their card is...
Sacrifice your library or something?
Yeah, basically, sacrifice your library. Leveler, 5 mana, artifact creature, rare, 10/10. When leveler enters the battlefield, exile all cards from your library.
It was really good. It's like Jace, right?
Wrong library.
Oh.
Wrong library. So that's a card no one played with. Apparently, Memnarch didn't have a library because he kept summoning levelers and sending them all around Mirrodin leveling stuff. So, yeah, when I heard levelers were coming back in Rise of the Eldrazi, that's what I thought of. When they were talking about levelers, I was like, really? Like, how are they going to make that interesting? Why are people at all excited about this? So I still don't call level up guys levelers. I call them level up guys because saying leveler just makes me think of this awful card. But
I guess the idea behind them was that Memnarch sent them out to the best warriors of all these different Mirrodin tribes every random time
every
that he
century?
Wanted to. Yeah, sometime.
The flavor text of Leveler said that he sent every century they ravage the, or, you know, attack.
Oh, okay. We'll go with century.
We'll go with century.
And they killed the best warrior of that tribe so that no one could rise against Memnarch, I suppose, was the idea.
Okay.
Do I have that right?
I have no idea. Also, every century is when the new suns would rise.
Oh.
So I don't... Yeah, that's probably not a coincidence. But Memnarch was the paranoid type, so the whole, like, killing of the best warrior thing certainly makes sense.
Yeah, and like I was saying, Glissa, kind of the storyline was Glissa trying to find an antagonist, basically.
Right, like, what is going on?
Because first she's against the levelers, and then she... Who does she go to? I don't know the exact timeline here, but she goes against Geth at some point.
Right.
And she goes against some of the Synod people.
Right. Right. Yeah, the novel was actually very awkward. I didn't really like it. It was like, first we're here, then we're here, then we're here, and it was, first we're green in the Tangle, then we go to red, and we're in, the red place.
Oxia?
Oxida Ridge, yeah. And then, like, now we're in white. Now we're in black. Now we're in blue. Now we're in white. And, like, just went from place to place. It was very, like, color distinct. And that's an aspect of Mirrodin, is that it's very color distinct. There's the white place, there's the blue place, there's the black place, there's the red place, and there's the green place, which is different from somewhere like Zendikar, where, like, all the different places kind of represented multiple colors, and it was just based on the terrain that was kind of more organic feeling, rather than Mirrodin, which is, like, very strictly laid out by color.
Yeah, that's kind of a symptom of the early setting design, too, because a lot of the Dominaria was very color-aligned.
Right.
If you remember.
On Mirrodin, I just thought it kind of even makes more sense because of the lacuna where the suns rise from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could see how that would really affect the land around it and create very kind of cordoned off mana zones, but still a little bit awkward to have such segregated areas. But it does go to add a lot of definition to the setting.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, if you think of, like, a place from Zendikar, like, unless it's one of the iconic places, you might not really have a color identity for it jump to mind, you know?
That's true.
And so, being able to have a color association can be a good thing. So, anyway, so, I mean, we're not going to rehash the novel, but basically, Glissa meets her friend Slobad. He's a goblin. And
he's Homestar Runner's friend, I think, right?
Yeah. He's in all the Homestar Runner videos.
Yeah, he's really good. Love him.
He's a tinkerer. He's really good with artifacts.
Including his artifact friend Bosch.
Right. He kind of joins the D&D adventuring party. And they battle Geth and Memnarch and they, you know, like any good story, fantasy story, they beat the bad guy.
Yay.
Yep, yay. So if you want to know the storyline, you can find a synopsis or read the novel or something, but one of the interesting things about Mirrodin as a setting is the Vanishing. And even before the Vanishing, like, the origin of all the races on the plane. Because it was created by Karn, Mirrodin was, and it was just a mechanical place. And Memnarch is why there are fleshy races.
Right. And I guess I'll go into my favorite part about the setting was, from the original, was Memnarch, because he was this evil mastermind, which I kind of gravitate to. Hopefully that doesn't say anything about my personality. But I really like those characters, and he kind of went insane with this Phyrexian oil, which might come to haunt them later, or in the present.
We'll see.
And he got in his head that he wanted to become a planeswalker as well. Memnarch did.
Right.
So he was obsessed with trying to find a planeswalker spark, so that's why he made these soul traps in these different planes somehow or other.
Right.
I'm not quite sure how. But he got
irrelevant.
He got soul trapped somehow so that all of these other creatures would teleport to Mirrodin and populate it.
Right.
And he was hoping one of these people, through the generations, would have a planeswalker spark that he could
harvest.
Usurp.
Usurp. Yeah, man. So, basically, all the fleshy people, none of them are from Mirrodin. They're all from anywhere else.
Ravnica, probably.
Probably Ravnica. Various places. Ravnica is very diverse racially. The only borders they see are guild. Not racial, though. So the Vedalkin wonder, where did they come from? And they researched this thing they call the origin query. Where did we come from? And that's the answer, is Memnarch brought you here to try to steal your plane talker's bark. But when he's defeated, the soul trap effects get reversed. And that kind of is at the end of the original Mirrodin storyline, but also sets the stage for the beginnings of the new Mirrodin storyline. One of the things that's kind of gone on is, well, a bunch of people disappeared.
Right.
And that's, they call that the vanishing.
And I remember when we left Mirrodin, I guess, I haven't read the novel, I can't speak to this 100%, but there's a lot of talk that the vanishing took everyone, all the entire population of Mirrodin away, except for the Ur-Golems, which were the original people there. And so when Wizards said that they were coming back to Mirrodin, everyone was thinking, who cares? No one's there except...
There's nobody there.
Slobad and Glissa and Geth. No one... It's going to be an empty, dumb plane. But I guess either they retconned or they explained better, maybe. I'm using air quotes by explain better.
Okay.
But they said that only the oldest generation of people, or of creatures, got dissipated back to wherever their homes were.
God vanished. The oldest generation. So what does that mean?
Exactly.
I haven't been able to figure out how any of this really makes sense. Like, I mean, we know that there were Ka before Raksha, and Raksha was the Ka before Kemba. And I'm just using this as a case study here.
Yeah, I think the Leonin were the only ones they really delved into on here, as far as I know. So, good case study.
Thank you. Well, yeah. I mean, the trolls vanished.
All
of them except for Thrun. Which makes me wonder also about Thrun. Like, why not?
I guess he was the youngest.
I mean, he doesn't look young, right?
Nope, not at all.
He looks super old. Like, so why? I mean, there's some flavor reference that, like, he is silent for some reason. And maybe his silence was a factor here, but... Like, by oldest generation, do we mean, like, the original generation? Because that's just what I would assume. But they should be dead or really old. I know trolls live really long, so it makes sense for them to be, still be around in order to vanish. But, like I said, Raksha was not... Definitely not from the original generation, because he would be way too old. And Leonin don't live that long. I mean...
Well, how many cat years?
So, point being, vanishing doesn't make sense, in my opinion. But it's a plot point.
Well, it's interesting only in, I guess, how they did it in the Leonin, which all of your elders, I guess all of your leaders disappear.
Right.
And what happens to a society after that? Like, that's a really interesting question, but...
And then they split.
Yeah, but... And then come together, eventually.
Right.
But yeah, they don't really go into that too much, but... I thought that was an interesting, maybe, attempt.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it can be interesting to explore what happens when the vanishing occurs, but figuring out why the vanishing makes any sense is what I'm having a problem with.
Yeah, it's true. And I don't know what set them back. Was it Karn that reversed them, I guess?
I kind of thought that it was just Memnarch's defeat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that he now wasn't around to hold the soul traps in place anymore.
So, like, when you're playing multiplayer and the player loses, all their permanents go away?
Yeah, they all get exiled and aren't affecting anything.
Gotcha.
So Memnarch got defeated, and that's what happened. So, the old Mirrodin was kind of, it's five distinct regions and kind of the Battle of Glissa versus Memnarch and the Levelers and all that. It had a whole big fantasy storyline. The new modern Phyrexia, to me, just feels like they're at war against Phyrexia. Like, that's all they are anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's interesting that they're all coming together, but the thing is, they just came together last set, too.
Yeah.
And we saw Zendikar just come all together. So it's
exactly.
Kind of a redundant thing going on now.
I agree. Like, the Mirrodin is, like, reading through the flavor text of the Mirrodin cards from Mirrodin Besieged and Scars of Mirrodin, almost all the flavor text just refers to them being at war or them coming together, whereas the Phyrexian flavor texts kind of define Phyrexia and add meaning to what it means to be Phyrexian. Mirrodins just are like, we're at war. We're going to win.
Yeah, and even the older Mirrodin cards didn't really... I guess they defined them a little bit, but most of them were, Memnarch's bad.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, to be fair, Mirrodin is a very evocative place, just from... The style is totally different than most other fantasy... Like, a lot of magic settings have their own distinct feel, but I think Mirrodin's kind of more radical in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, it has that going for it, at least. But since that radical change is the metal, and I don't really like the metal or the sci-fi element, it didn't really do anything for me.
Do you think if the threat was anything but Phyrexians, you would care about this set?
It would be rough. Like, because, like I said, when I heard it was Mirrodin, I was like, oh, no. Like, I had that same feeling, like, I want to return somewhere. Like, I like the idea of returning somewhere. But the fact that I don't like Mirrodin means that's not where I would have chosen at all. So, that was a little awkward. But when I heard it was Phyrexia, they were fighting, I was like, yes, this set's going to be amazing. And I still feel that way.
Those are actual recordings of your reaction.
Right, I recorded myself and I just spliced them in just now.
Yeah.
So, so do you think
special
there's
a surprise?
Do you think there's any way Mirrodin could win?
Well, it's Mirrodin week or episode time, so yes, of course they'll win.
Go Mirrodin?
Yeah, Mirrodin. You will win, Mirrodin Pure. I know it.
Cool. Wait, this sounds great. I can't wait. Hopefully there are no Phyrexian cards in the next set.
Probably not.
Oh, man, I'm so excited to say that.
No, we're lying.
Oh. Lying? There's still going to be Living Weapon and Infect?
Yeah.
Yes!
I'm pretty sure.
Rise, dear Mirrodin.
Do you want to do your...
No.
although, here's one thing that I wanted to bring up. Slowbad.
That's what she said. Go ahead.
I'll get it. So, Slowbad and the Mirari, which is what Memnarch was kind of made of, are still unaccounted for. On the Wizard's site, they say that Slowbad fell when he and Glissa got ambushed by, I think, goblins or something.
Like Slain fell or Chipton fell?
Well, either one. Since it's Mirrodin week, I'm going to say he just tripped and fell, and Glissa kept going.
Cool, okay.
Maybe that's why she betrayed people. Or she's a traitor, or whatever she is.
No. That got discussed on an article.
I know, I'm just kidding. But, it's Mirrodin week, so...
It's Mirrodin week.
I think if the only chance Mirrodin has is if, in the end, the Deus Ex Machina, which would be appropriate for this plane, I guess, is Slowbad coming back with the Mirari. Because I guess I can kind of believe that they would kill Slowbad off stage, although it's kind of depressing. But I can't believe they would just let go of the Mirari like that.
That's a good point.
If he doesn't come back with it, I think it'll play some kind of role somewhere.
That's true. It's kind of a big deal. Yeah. It's a major player in...
Three sets, right? Three blocks.
Right. Onslaught, Odyssey, and then Mirrodin.
Mirrodin is the main villain.
As the main villain, indeed. So, fair enough. That's how Mirrodin can win.
Can you see any way of? Can you see any way of Mirrodin winning?
I never thought about, like, I just imagined being like, we're at war, like. They just fight better, but that doesn't seem possible. So, I mean, it would require some kind of upset, like you said, some kind of Deus Ex Machina or whatever. Like that, I really didn't even entertain the thought.
Not even on Mirrodin Week?
Not even on Mirrodin Week. Yeah, no. I don't know. I'll just watch and see. So, like we said, Mirrodin is five kind of distinct regions. Kind of just run through them real quickly in case you've probably seen this. If you're not familiar with it intimately, you'll recognize some of these details. The white kind of area is the Razor Grass Fields and Tajnar, where the Kemba and the Leonin who remained with Kemba live in Tajnar. That's the tall, white tower place. Oriok humans live there, Lakshan nomads, and the two Leonin tribes, the ones who live in Tajnar and the ones who, after the Vanishing, when Raksha disappeared, split off, not wanting to follow anyone else. Which I thought was similar to the two tribes of the Naya Leonin, or catfolk, because they also had the two tribes, the ones who still lived in the city, and kind of the broken down catfolk city of Naya, and the ones who kind of roamed the domains of Naya as kind of wild. Because there was a time when the catfolk there were very organized and structured and lived in a big city and were the most kind of sophisticated and powerful species on Naya. But there was a renegade who split the tribe, and then elves kind of became more powerful again. Anyway.
Oh, Andrew, and your intimate knowledge of catfolk.
Yep. From the cat guide to catfolk. I got this flavor text that says, crackling with the power of Mirrodin's white sun, the face of the Peace Strider reflects the Mirrodin's spiritual connection to their world. That's from Peace Strider. But I just thought it was interesting that kind of the reference of the Mirrodin's spiritual connection to their world. I mean, considering none of them were even from Mirrodin originally, and this is a plane of metal, which you don't usually associate with spiritual aspects. I thought this was a kind of more defining detail of Mirrodin. Kind of more defining than really any of the flavor texts that were just talking about war and whatnot. Kind of saying,
sure.
Like, hey, look, spiritual connection to the world. That's just something interesting.
Yeah, didn't the goblins worship the sun, too?
Well, their son, yeah.
Yeah.
The red son. So.
I think they're the ones, was it them or the cat people that had names for the different sons? Do you remember?
Man, I even looked for the names of the sons and only found one. So, I think it was the goblins, but I don't, I'm not going to be able to say for sure. Yeah. A named character in white in the recent Mirrodin block is Rhea of Bladehold, as seen on Bladehold, or Hero of Bladehold. According to a story on the mini site, she counts time flawlessly in her head, which just stuck out to me as being a very mechanical aspect. And, you know, Mirrodin's a mechanical world, and they're all infused with metal. But the idea of that kind of computer-like technicality occurring mentally was interesting. So, tell us about Blue with the Quicksilver Sea, Lumen Grid, and the Synod.
Okay, well, my favorite, I guess, tribe in Mirrodin were the Vettelkin. Because I really love the, I guess, the common placeholder races for each color. Like, green has the elves, always boring. Red has goblins. But blue always, I felt they were searching for a race for a long time, and I was really hopeful for the Vettelkin to serve that purpose. But
become that?
Yeah, which they maybe have a little bit, but with Merfolk coming back, maybe not so much.
Yeah.
But I really like them. They were weird in that on Mirrodin they could only breathe water, and they had four arms. But they were always cool because they were sneaky. They didn't really care about anything with emotions.
Right.
They were just trying to, I guess, sneakily help Memnarch however they could.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they were in the, I think, the Lumen Grid.
Right.
And they were the ones who went around the, where the moon came out of.
Yeah, the Lacuna.
Yeah, the blue Lacuna. But they're also the Nurok humans who, do we know a lot about them?
I mean, they're scientists. They just kind of get outclassed by the Vettelkin.
Yeah, and they have weird glasses.
And they have weird glasses.
But I was really happy to see the Vettelkin come back in Ravnica and then later in Alara.
Yeah, I like Vettelkin recurring. I don't know. I mean, I don't think they need to be there all the time. I don't think they fit somewhere like Zendikar. But definitely seeing them, you know, coming back is good. I'm not a huge fan of Vettelkin as Vettelkin, like it sounds like you are. But as, like, a blue race, I think they they fit, right? You know, I think they should use them.
Yeah, I really like the Moonfolk, too, I think. Is that what the Kamigawa people were called?
Yes, I really like those, but I don't have as high hopes for them.
Yeah, I don't think they're coming back.
Moonfolk creature type is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So Black has... What's that?
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say the same thing you were about to say.
Oh, Black has Mephidros. That's the swampy black area occupied with the Moriok humans and the Nim zombies. I don't know why they have to name the zombies special, and I don't know why all the human tribes end with Eok, but they do. apparently in the new Mirrodin storyline, apparently after the vanishing, the Nim outnumbered the humans. So apparently a lot of humans disappeared, even though we don't know why. And the humans who were able to fight back became warlords and rulers through the fame their heroism brought them. So that's very Black that they kind of took advantage of any little, you know, eke out any advantage that they managed to get for themselves.
And now they're vampires.
Vampires, I think yesterday or today, an article went up talking about the old version, or like, kind of how old Mirrodin didn't get a lot of space to talk about or to make room for vampires, but as they've pushed the vampire tribe, they naturally had to bring them back more in black in the recent sets. And I felt like they'd really not done it right, because the old Airden vampires were like mechanical and just had big claws instead of fangs that they used to drain you. And their whole, like, quote, digestive system was just not even hooked up to their fangs, just hooked up to these claws they had.
Mm-hmm.
And there was only one vampire in the Mirrodin. And the higher number of vampires in these sets really just looked like they had fangs, and the claws seemed kind of irrelevant. I was upset. But this new article says, hey, look, look closer, like, this is still a thing. They still, their fangs aren't doing much, and their claws do matter. So, that Mirrodin vampires versus other planes vampires is an interesting dichotomy.
Yeah, and it gives them kind of an alien nature to them, which I really appreciate.
Right.
And I might be in the minority here, perhaps, but I like vampires a lot more than zombies.
I also like vampires more than zombies. I think there needs to be room for both, but...
Yeah,
I'd rather be a vampire than a zombie.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a lot of vampire hate since Twilight, which I can understand, but I still really like vampires more than zombies.
Yeah, I don't love Twilight, but, I mean, vampires are still cooler.
Yeah.
I mean,
Until they're sparkling, I mean, just don't get the foil vampires and you'll be fine.
Wow. You just called people with foiled out vampire decks Twilight lovers. I love it.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't give my email out this time.
Okay. Let's skip this episode. So, red is the Ox of the Mountain Chain. There's the Great Furnace. There are the Volshok humans, and there are goblins. It's where Slowbad's from. And the Volshok, the human red tribes, all their tribe names are named after objects like helm and hammer and anvil and sword. That's why we have Koth of the Hammer. He's from the Hammer tribe. So
it's hammer time.
It's hammer time. It's Koth of the Hammer time. And there are other tribes. And
the food processor tribe.
Yep. Bailey of the food processor.
Mm-hmm. The shoehorn tribe.
Maybe we should go to green. Green. No. as the Tangle, the Viridian Forest, and Tel Jalad, the great tree with all those prophecies inscribed on it. The trolls live there. They're the Silvok humans and the Viridian elves. And a weird human who was born with no metal. Her name is Malira, and in Mirrodin Besiege we see her keepers. Malira's keepers can't have counters placed on them.
Yeah, you told me about this person, and I don't know anything about them, except the keepers.
Right.
Was she in the novel at all?
There's no novel yet. They haven't been releasing the novel until the third set.
Oh.
So
how do you know about this human?
I think it was on the mini site. There's just kind of a picture of her. I think there was a little story, but I forget. But if you just look at the picture, you see there's no metal on her. Like, everyone on Mirrodin has, like, metal arms and shoulders and hair and whatever, but not Malira.
Maybe it's internal?
Maybe all of her organs.
Sorry. Like a dentana?
She's like, gotcha, I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
Am I supposed to know who that is?
Who?
Adentana?
Oh, Dentana. Never mind, Google that later.
I don't want to.
Don't worry about it. Don't turn the save filter on.
Okay. What? No way. Never. So those are the colors of Mirrodin, and kind of a rundown of the locations and a few characters from the old and new Mirrodin storylines. And I think that's it for part one.
Yeah. So take a break.
Take a break, and we'll see you in part two.
Come back with more Mirrodin action. That's the third set. See what I did?
Oh, yeah. I was going to cut you after come back for more mirrored in action.
Oh. Well, now you have to keep that joke. Cut after this.
Okay.
Welcome back from the break.
Thanks. What did you do during the break?
Oh, man. I looked up the Mirrodin moons, according to, I think, the goblins.
You just had to rub it in my face?
Yep, basically.
Right. Well, Knight's Whisper, it's a sorcery, costs one and a black. It says you draw two cards and you lose two life. It says the Moriok call the Black Moon the Whisperer. At her apex, she whispers of power. So,
oh,
I don't know if that was a throw forward to Shale Dread the Whispering One, but...
Oh, that'd be good.
That'd be good.
Foresight.
Yeah, so...
Not the card Foresight.
That's different.
The word.
Predict.
Yeah, well, my source...
What do the goblins call it?
Well, my source here says that... According to the novel, The Moons of Mirrodin, they were named, the white one is called Bringer, the blue one is the Eye of Doom, because if you're a goblin and born when that one was up, I guess you were thrown in the furnace.
Oh, cool.
And Ingle was a black one. No idea what that's supposed to mean. Sky Tyrant was the red one.
And then, like a Beholder Eye Tyrant?
Yes, probably.
Okay.
Yeah, Tyrants don't really make sense in red, so I guess only the goblins would consider that their king.
Well, I mean, like a normal person's like a tyrant.
Yeah, probably. Okay. And then Lyas, which is what Glissa named the green one after her sister.
Aw, because they got killed. She got killed by levelers.
Yep. Oh, wait, no. But that was later. Sort of. We'll go with that.
Wait, what do you mean?
I think she came back later.
Her sister did?
Spoiler alert.
Her sister came back?
Yeah.
She wasn't dead?
No, but she died later. So she might as well have died.
Oh, okay. That's
according to me. As far as I'm concerned.
Glad we settled that. So, all right. Well, we both have a few cards that we thought were particularly worth mentioning in reference to Magic Story. I happen to have this one on my screen, so I'm going to talk about Dominyr. It says, the flavor text, what the card does is, you control enchanted artifact creature. It's like mind control for artifact creatures only and cost one blue, which is a pretty good discount.
How much infect does it get, though?
Zero infects.
Oh.
Doesn't have any watermarks, either.
I don't get it, then. Just kidding.
Dominyr. Anyway, the flavor text is, since they haven't seen their original master for millennia, golems are eager to take orders from anyone. So one of the big questions about the vanishing is, you know, how old were the people vanishing? But also, like, how old is Mirrodin? And it doesn't make sense to me that Mirrodin could be that old, because Karn made it, right?
Well, I think he made it, I guess, a long time ago.
Yeah, but I mean, go ahead.
He only got corrupted by Memnarch in the Phyrexian oil recently.
Right, but so then he's millennia old?
Karn?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know, how long has it been since Dominaria got messed up?
I mean, so that's...
Millennia?
That's the thing, is no, like, in Time Spiral, people were still around from the invasion. Like, there was, like, a funeral, like, commemorating the invasion that had happened, like, some significant number of years ago, but not, like, in the hundreds, even. So, considering Karn would have had to have made Mirrodin after that, and then take place in this Time Spiral storyline with Venser, and then Venser is now on modern Mirrodin, the years don't add up right.
Maybe they do their years different.
Right. And maybe he made a plane that would, in just a few moments, tick forward millennia.
Yeah. Actually, maybe to support that, there is this post that Will McDermott,
yeah,
one of the authors of
right.
the novels, put on MTG Salvation a long time ago, that said when he wrote it, he was told that Mirrodin is really small. It only has a diameter of about 450 kilometers, which is, I guess, the Earth's moon is 3,470 kilometers, so
basically
a little more than
moon.
A little bit more than a tenth the size of the moon. So very small.
Right.
So maybe that means their millennia are very, very short.
So when they say millennia, they just mean like a couple of years.
Yeah. It's like a week to us.
But the golems, they're like, man, it's been such a long time.
Yeah, but then Dominaria is supposedly really huge. It's like 2 to 4 times the size of Earth, so
right.
I don't know how they do their millennia either.
Sure. But basically, I'm just confused about how old the plane is and how this makes sense.
Fix your calendars, wizards.
Yeah, and all the golems, like there's a cycle of golems that have colored activated abilities from the original Mirrodin. They all have flavor text that indicate the same thing. Like, Cobalt Golem says, centuries before the first tides of the Quicksilver Sea rose to meet each new sun, the Mirrodin's light shone on the golems alone.
Yeah, because I guess that's all the Ur-Golems that were set up to help Memnarch figure out
maintain the
Mirrodin.
Was it, like, not just the Ur-Golems, but I think just, like, the regular golems, too? Like, the regular little ones?
Yeah. It was my understanding that Ur-Golems were just the original golems that were there.
Okay, not
but maybe they were
size at all?
Yeah, maybe they were big, too. I'm not really too sure.
I just took Ur to mean big, because it sounds important.
Ur.
That's not even what I meant. Pick a card, any card.
Well, since we're talking about these Ur-Golems, I'm gonna do another cycle, maybe.
Sure.
To talk about the Five Towers.
Go.
Starting with Tower of Fortunes.
Tower of Fortunes.
Remember, these things were 4 cards in the original Mirrodin's block,
right?
That each had an ascending. They did something in ascending number by 2, or multiple by of 2.
Right.
So this one is an artifact that costs 4 and 8 and tap it to draw 4 cards. And the flavor text says the Ur-Golem etchings began by celebrating Mirrodin's creator, a golem of almost limitless power. They end by cursing his protector, being called Memnarch. And much like my cycle last time, I really like these because when put together, they all tell a story. For instance, the next one, Tower of Champions, which is, I guess, the green one, which if you...
I mean, it's not colored, but it's greenish.
Yeah.
There's green in art, too.
It fills the green slot.
Yeah.
It, if you pay 8, tap it, it gets a creature +8/+8 until end of turn.
6.
Oh, oops. You're right. Sorry about that. The flavor text says, the Ur-Golem runes tell of the transformation of Mirrodin's warden from silent guardian to merciless god. So that furthers his plot. And the next one is Tower of Murmurs.
With 10, yeah. Oh, 8. 6, 8. Got it.
This is the, I guess, the black stand-in, which Mills 8. That one is etched on its surface are warnings from a long-lost race of Urgulms pushed to the brink of extinction. So now the Urgulms are gone.
Yeah.
When you look at Tower of Eons, you gain 10 life if you pay 8, and its etchings tell the Urgulm stories of an entity able to force life into a limitless plane. So, talking about Karn there. And I guess people got really... I guess people got really mad because they saw that as a cycle, and there wasn't a fifth, like a red one. So they made one in Scars.
Nice.
This one is the Tower of Calamities. This is the newer one, which does 12 damage to target creature. This one says, the Urgulms concealed one of the towers out of fear that its power would be abused and in anticipation of a time when its power would be sorely needed.
Nice work, Urgulms.
Yeah, but I've heard a lot of people complain, Spikes mostly, about how terrible this card is, the Tower of Calamities, because it does 12 damage to a creature. But
can't even kill a Blightsteel Colossus.
Yeah, can't even do that. But I don't think they understand that the other four came before it, because it's so perfect.
Yeah, it is perfect.
And the flavor of it's really great. And if you look at the Wizards thing, one of the comments in Gatherer says that since it taps to do 12 damage, one of the people just imagine it falling on a creature, which I think is perfect. I love that image.
Sure. I imagine it summoning a slightly smaller Shivan Meteor, but okay.
When 11 just won't do.
That's right. What? Oh, man. My problem with these towers is they go in an order, but the order isn't color-friendly. Because the color wheel has order to it. It's white, blue, black, red, green, or you can start anywhere in the circle as long as you, you know, follow the rules of the circle, and this does not follow those rules.
Sure.
What was the first one?
Tower
of something with fortunes. So that's blue, blue, green, black, white, red. That's not a color order.
Yeah. Well, drawing cards is better. Probably the best.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why each number is what it is. It's just, if there's going to be...
Can't be perfect, Andrew.
Why not? If I were in charge, everything would be perfect.
If you're in charge, everything would give you catfolk.
No comment. Oh, crap, I just realized the set I've been working on doesn't have any catfolk in it. Time for a redo.
Start from scratch.
Start
from scratching post.
I get it, yeah. Catfolk, what was I thinking? I have cats, like I have lions, like I have, yeah, a lion and a panther, but no.
Well, I mean, if you're into that too, I guess.
No, that's not what I meant.
Lions are pretty noble, I suppose.
What?
Teach his own.
Show some pride. This card called Cosmic Larva. I didn't pick it up for anything having to do with Mirrodin, rather having to do with Zendikar. I always thought this card was weird from the original Mirrodin. It's just this floating bulbous thing of, like, it looks like a big ball of lava, like a lava balloon, I guess.
That's obviously a beast.
It is a beast. It's not obviously a beast. It's obviously an Eldrazi. You should have said Eldrazi. Sure, Eldrazi.
That.
Because that's what I think of when I look at this card. Is, I mean, even the flavor text is, for millennia they wandered from plane to plane, devouring all metal. Finally, their wanderings are over. That sounds like, without the metal reference, that could be the Eldrazi. You know?
Yeah, like, I could see that.
Devouring all mana. Like, and now we have Eldrazi. And the whole cosmic thing, like, and larva, Eldrazi spawn.
They are big.
And big, exactly. So, and I remember thinking when this card first came out, like, how do non-planeswalkers travel through the plains. Like, that's just not a normal thing that things can do. But I was like, oh, what's this mysterious beast? So, you know, it has its own kind of epic way of doing it that just is inconceivable to mortals. And that's exactly what the Eldrazi do as well. So,
yeah, Memnarch's whole plan was to get the Planeswalker spark. He should have just been studying these things instead of Glissa.
Exactly. Just hang out with the cosmic larva.
Or he should have been studying how he set those soul traps on different planes.
I agree. I don't know how to go to different planes, but I can bring other things here. Rather than reverse engineer my idea, I'm going to wait for thousands of years and try to summon. And try to steal someone else's Planeswalker spark, which I also don't understand.
That makes sense to me.
Good.
Also keep their soul stones under your bed.
What?
Okay. Sorry, that was a Phyrexian joke.
We're in Mirrodin week, David.
Listen, you brought up Zendikar.
Yeah. Whoops. That's like the third time I brought up Zendikar, too. Talking about levelers and color-based regions. Now the Eldrazi.
Do you want to do another card?
Sure. This card is called Frogmite.
Oh, that one.
Basically, what I get from Frogmite is Frogmite eat blink moths. If you look at Frogmite, it's like a robot frog sitting on something, and it's just funny to just imagine him snapping out his tongue and grabbing a blink moth, because it's just so parallel to, you know, frogs eating flies, and blink moths are little motes of knowledge, but it's funny.
Good one. This also has the affinity, which everyone liked.
Everyone?
Mm-hmm. No.
I'm not sure everyone. I don't like affinity.
Yeah. I think a lot of people complained about it. Maybe.
Maybe. So, see, how many more cards do you have to go here?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Oh, I have two more and then a cycle.
Cycle. I guess I'll jump on another one then.
Oh, don't hurt it.
Azuri's Brigade. So, am I mistaken here, or is Azuri and his whole thing all about, like, being against artifacts?
I think you might be right.
So what is up with Azuri's Brigade having Metalcraft?
That's a good question.
So, I pose that to the universe, the multiverse, even.
They may be using scraps. That seems kind of red, though.
Should they be? Like, if they're all against artifacts? Like,
yeah.
Shouldn't they be disregarding artifacts rather than being like, oh, I got three?
Yeah. I never really understood why any of those trolls and everything, the Viridians, didn't like metal to begin with, since their whole plane is part of it.
I don't know. It's an Elvish heritage thing. They didn't get the memo from the Oriok, who are all like, the steel and the spirit of Mirrodin.
How do you feel about the flavor text on the Brigade?
I don't know. I'll have to read it. It's silly. Riding ravenous, ever-growing Vorax is almost as dangerous as fitting them with saddles. See how we don't get anything out of Mirrodin flavor text?
No, they're dangerous. Or at least is more dangerous as putting saddles on pigs.
Wait, so giant, like, boar with big tusks in a fantasy world are dangerous?
I don't get it. This is breaking new ground.
News to me. News to me. That's weird. I said news to me and then looked at necrotic ooze, which if you just take the first initial of necrotic and pronounce it with the second word, it's news, but spelled differently.
That's what I usually call it.
News?
No.
What? Necrotic ooze to me.
Do you want to talk about necrotic ooze?
I guess so. I wasn't gonna, but then I saw it. Oh man, this is another flavor text problem. To death all must go, and so in death lies ultimate power, says Geth, Lord of the Vault.
Oh, hey, Phyrexia.
But I say, to the bathroom all must go, and so in the bathroom lies ultimate power.
That makes sense to me.
What does the... Yes, everyone dies, so let's go die and, like, Claim the power. You go die. I'll hang out in the bathroom. See who ends up on top.
Or at least on the bowl.
Or on the bowl. That's right. I don't know.
Yeah, I really don't understand why this wasn't Phyrexian.
Well, it just didn't fit all the criteria.
Yeah, well.
Phyrexian list of things to do, and also it didn't. They had to have a certain number of mirror and black cards.
Yeah, I feel one of their criteria should be art and flavor.
Nope. I see your point, but I can also respect the validity of a list.
Well, I don't have any respect for much things.
I thought you had a Melvin half.
Oh, yeah. There's no respect in that Melvin half, though.
Oh, respectless. All right, pick a card. Do a card now.
All right, I'm gonna pick Chrome Steed.
Okay.
This is a horse, an artifact horse.
Nice. I like
another
horses.
Metal crafter. Gets +2/+2 if you have metal craft. And according to Arioch myth, it collects scraps in order to reassemble its lost rider, which, best of flavor text, by the way, I thought that was really cool, because I really love, as I said last time, I believe, I really love flavor text that tells a story. And the thought of this mechanical horse creature, who I guess lost its rider somehow. He jumped off, maybe to go back to his wife, or her husband, or her wife. Is so lonely that he reassembles scraps to kind of make a fake rider for him. Sounds really cool. It tells a little story about what life on Mirrodin would be like. And also the art is really cool, because it has a very aerodynamic, sharp-looking horse.
It does.
I know you like horses sometimes.
Yeah, I do.
But because they're like cats a little bit. But I've never been a fan of horses, but this one looks really cool.
It does look cool. And so what the flavor text is saying is when you have Metalcraft and you have a Chrome Seed, you need to imagine a metallic rider on its back. And that's where an extra +2/+2 comes from?
Yeah, so whatever other artifacts you have out in play are probably riding your Chrome Steed.
Got it! Okay. That makes tons of sense. Over 9,000 sense.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So here's another story bit. Is Quicksilver Geyser says, Phyrexians are tenacious. That's not the same thing as clever. Now, I'm going to skip over whether or not I think that's well written, which I actually think it's not awful. So, but basically what I get out of it is Tezzeret is fighting the Phyrexians, which makes sense for any sentient being to fight the Phyrexians. But the main... This is the only detail I've seen that indicates Tezzeret's allegiance in the Mirrodin vs. Phyrexian battle, or war, as we could call it. And we also know that Tezzeret is an agent of Volus. And in Alara, Nicol Volus was kind of the antagonist, you know, trying to drain mana from the Maelstrom. And in Zendikar, he was the antagonist, kind of orchestrating the release of the Eldrazi.
In Kamigawa, he did something.
In Kamigawa? What the F did he do in Kamigawa? Who knows? Here in Mirrodin, if Tezzeret's working for Nicol Bolas, what's Nicol Bolas' agenda, and is it aligned with the antagonists who are the Phyrexians? Kind of the trend is that, yeah, Nicol Bolas should be on the bad guy's side. So Tezzeret being on Nicol Bolas' side means Tezzeret should be with the Phyrexians. But this flavor text says he's kind of not, is what I'm getting here.
Yeah, which brings up a lot of questions, for me at least, which I guess we can talk about when we get to Nicol Bolas week, which I hope happens soon. But Since he's an elder dragon, does he predate Phyrexia on Dominaria or in the plains at large? And if so, does he remember them? Would he be against them as well? Would he be for them?
Who knows? Interesting. Yeah, like, what is the Elder Dragon versus Thran timeline?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and also, why does Nicol Bolas have to do with every storyline? Because one of two things can be the case here. Either A, Nicol Bolas actually has to do with every storyline, even the ones we're not seeing on other planes. Or the creators of Magic at Wizards are just following around Nicol Bolas around to whatever setting he happens to be fiddling around in.
Nicol Bolas the Gathering?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're getting to, right?
Well, I did say I like Mastermind, so I'm not really averse to that.
You know, you should read it. Test of Metal, the Tezzeret novel.
Is there a synopsis?
Just, you have to, because that's, I mean, the whole thing is, like, the whole masterminding capabilities of Nicol Bolas versus the masterminding capabilities of Tezzeret, and kind of who outwits the other one.
I think I know who wins, though.
And also Sphinxes. Well, the thing is,
what did you just say?
Also Sphinxes?
Oh, Sphinxes. Thought we'd have to bleep that out.
We don't have bleeping capabilities.
No.
Also,
Ka.
What?
Sorry.
Smurf. Sorry, that's an inside joke with myself and other people who have listened to a podcast to which I doubt anyone listening to a Magic podcast has listened. End aside.
Good one.
Well, even at the end of Test of Metal, you think you know who got the best of the other one, and then it still, like, tricks you, like, a couple times. So, anyway, I think it's worth reading. I think it was good. I also think the Jace book was good, whatever that one was called. So, you have another card?
Yeah. I'll do my other cycle.
Okay.
It is the Caldra cycle. It starts with Sword of Caldra. These are all legendary artifacts. One from each of the original Mirrodin sets.
Which were also the expansion symbols?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
The first one gives... The sword gives +5/+5 to the thing it equips, and it exiles a creature when it does damage to it. The second one, which is the coolest for reasons I'll get into, says equipment names Sword of Caldra, Shield of Caldra, and Helm of Caldra are indestructible, and equipped creature is indestructible. And the last one, the Helm, gives the equipped creature first strike, trample, and haste, and if you pay one, and you have all the other ones, you can put a 4/4 colorless avatar named Caldra into play and equip all of those Caldra things to it.
Yeah.
So, these are really cool. One of the things that I remember is getting the pre-release Sword of Caldra when I went to that. I think it was my first pre-release I went to. It was the Mirrodin one. It's really exciting. It has a special place in my heart. And it was really cool. And I realized that it was the expansion symbol maybe halfway through I was playing. I don't know if someone told me that or if I found out myself, but either way, I thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
And then when the second one came out, I think I also went to the pre-release. I forget if this was the card, but that would only make sense. And I immediately recognized that the shield was the expansion symbol.
Keeping your eye out for the symbol?
Yeah. And... also, that in the name, it had the name of a card that did not yet exist. The Helm of Caldra.
Yeah.
Which...
not to say, that's exciting.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. Because I think we kind of knew, or at least I did, and I'm sure most other people did, knew that there would be another one for the next set to follow the pattern, but just to name it ahead of time was, I thought, really cool. And
yeah.
Then the Helm just brings it all together.
Yeah. I really like this cycle. I've never played with them, but I really like how they reference each other. Like, cards refer to other cards by, like, subtypes, like goblin or elf or whatever, and that can be evocative in a way, but, like, going as far as to be as specific as with card names is pretty cool.
Yeah. And the fact that they put the expansion symbol as the art for each one.
Yeah, kind of says, hey, these
or the other way around.
These are important.
Yeah. And then they played a very, very minor storyline role.
Yeah, they're actually not important. Gotcha.
Yeah, at the very end, they kind of collect them. At the very end, summon Khaldra to defeat Memnarch, and Memnarch, just like his card, just takes control of them.
So maybe Khaldra's an Ur-Golem.
Hmm.
Just kidding, he's an avatar.
Oh.
I don't know. Maybe Ur-Golems are avatars. Johnny can summon an avatar. So, yeah, they should do more cards like this that reference specific other cards to do cool effects. Like, I think in Alara they had, like, uncommons that if you sacrifice, like, three black creatures, you can search for the demon or whatever referenced by name, and they do those sometimes.
Yeah, I remember in, I think Mirage or something, they had a card where you can do that. I think it was something to do with the Breathstealer people.
The Night Stalkers?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like three Night Stalkers, and one of them has the ability to sacrifice three Night Stalkers or something to search for the... something about night.
Yeah, I thought it was... Oh, well. Breathstealer or something in there.
I don't know, but... Yeah, and I mean, the problem with... They're just bad. You know, like, I want to play with them. I want them to be good. You know?
Oh, didn't the Grinning Demon, you could cheat that in with something, too?
Grinning Demon, I think, had Morph. So I'm not sure which one.
I might be thinking
here.
Of something else.
What?
But then, yeah, and then the Zendikar thing, going back to how the...
Yeah, go ahead.
The shield referenced the helm, which didn't exist yet. That Zendikar land, like the Eye of Old... Jun or something?
Eye of Ugin?
Yeah, Eye of Ugin. Reference Eldrazi before they existed, which I thought was cool, too.
Yeah, that was cool.
And the Eldrazi Temple, too.
Yes. Kind of saying that creature type was just like, what?
Yeah. I really like when they do that, when they kind of hint at what's to come. And I really love the spoiler seasons.
Yeah, we haven't had much of a spoiler season for action. New Phyrexia,
no,
I mean.
Not quite yet. Kind of keeping that under wraps.
Yeah. So there are a lot of Night Stalkers, but Urborg Panther actually says sacrifice a creature named Feral Shadow, a creature named Breathstealer, and Urborg Panther. Search your library for a card named Spirit of the Night and put that card onto the battlefield, then shuffle
it. Oh, there we go. I knew there was a Breathstealer somewhere in there.
Yep, there's a Breathstealer. Spirit of the Night is a big, scary 6/5 flying trample haste pro black first strike while attacking. I love first strike while attacking. Just kidding. He's flying trample protection from black. First strike when attacking. Spirit of the Night is unaffected by summoning sickness.
Oh, thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah. Fun. So more cards with specific names, but make them playable. Good. And not just, like, sacrifice this to search for that, because that's not even really that exciting, in my opinion.
Do you have...
It's like assembling combo pieces for not a combo.
Oh, you and your combos.
Yeah, I want to play with the... if I'm going to assemble pieces, I want it to be a combo. Anyway, do I have another card?
Yeah.
This one's called Knowledge Pool. It has a lot of text. If you want to know what it does, you should read it. but Knowledge Pool is actually, like, in Lumengrid. Like, it's actually a thing. It's a place. A lot of artifacts are just like, artifact. Whatever. Tumble Magnet. Trigon of Corruption.
Wait, those ride the Chrome Steed, don't they?
They do ride the Chrome. They're all piled up on his back.
Yeah. Them and the Knowledge Pool.
And a Silvermere with a lasso.
Mm-hmm. Man, I want to see that picture.
The best picture submitted to us gets a prize.
The usual prize.
Yeah, the usual.
But we'll say it twice. But knowledge pool, the Vettel can have a knowledge pool, and it's where they put their serum, and they do serum like a drug, where they like learn new stuff, and they harvest blink moths for serum. Apparently, frog mites also eat those blink moths, but they harvest blink moths for serum, and the serum goes in the knowledge pool, and that's this card.
So. Isn't, I think the knowledge pool is specifically where the moon came out of, too, wasn't it?
It looks like it might be above it. I don't think it's actually it. But it looks like it might be, like, floating above it or something.
Okay. Yeah, I think from what I remember reading, which, again, I didn't read the novel, so this might not actually be the case, but I think if you swam to the bottom of the knowledge pool, you would get to the opening of where the moon came out of.
That could be the case. Yeah, in the art here, it looks like it's like floating above a pillar beam of light.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, the lacuna are just huge holes in the ground where, like, suns flew out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... And they go all the way down into the core from where the moon erupted. So it's not like you could fill it with water because it would just, like, be in the core.
Yeah, speaking of that, I don't know if this is worth saying since everyone else but me might have known this before, but only recently I realized that the Mirren watermark is a bisection of Mirrodin with the five lacuna going to the core.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, when I found that out, I kind of had one of those like dumb eureka moments where I had to hit my forehead, even if I didn't want to. It left a bruise.
Wait, so are there five holes there?
Yeah.
There are five? Oh. I guess I just see the four segments, and I think four. But yeah, there are five.
Yeah, because I never understood what that symbol meant. And then I figured that out. I think someone pointed it out to me. And I was like, oh, of course, you're right. That makes so much sense.
Well, that's cool. Another question is, what is the Scars of Mirrodin expansion symbol? WTH. That's something I've seen people wondering. Do you have any ideas of that?
Yeah, the cog?
Yeah. I guess, is it a cog?
Yeah, I don't know. I assume.
Like, I saw... Like, the best idea that someone else had, I saw, was... It kind of represents, you know, in the Glimmer Void, they're all, like, those tiles. Like, the Glimmer Void tiles.
Oh, yeah.
That it just looks like one of those. And that's true. It does. I kind of came up with my own thing, which is not very strict or specific. It's just kind of... Imagine the circle represents Mirrodin as a plane. Mm-hmm. A spherical plane. And also its organic nature. And then, like, the Glimmer Void panel shaped shape inside of it. I don't know how many sides that is, or I'd refer to it by its geometric name, but is that a hexagon? Kind of represents the mechanical aspect of Mirrodin. So it's like the organic and the mechanical in one symbol. So that's just what I made up. I don't know.
Yeah, I like that. We'll go with that.
Okay, good. But I mean, whoever that was is just a forum post, but it's obviously right that that's, I mean, the hexagon glimmer point panel is a big repeated thing, like all across the style of Mirrodin. So. So, Circle of Protection Artifacts is from Fifth Dawn, which kind of completed the Circle of... it completed the Circle of Protection cycle as early as 4th edition, and then was in 5th edition and Antiquities, and then they reprinted in Fifth Dawn, where it'd kind of be more relevant. But the flavor text on that version of the card says, Memnarch shall rage against us, we shall endure.
Oh.
That sound familiar? Yeah.
does.
So, I like that a lot.
They're enduring all the way back then.
Exactly. We're at war against Wemnark. Okay, vanishing. We're at war against Phyrexia. Circle of Protection, Phyrexia is going to be in.
Yeah.
New Phyrexia, you heard it now.
Circle of Protection Infect.
Yep. Next time, a source with Infect, a source of your choice with Infect would deal damage to you this turn. Prevent that damage.
Wow, that just is broken with Darksteel or Blightsteel Colossus.
Is it?
Yeah. That's because all decks will use Blightsteel Colossus.
It's broken against Blightsteel Colossus. Mm-hmm. And then and you can play Phyrexian Batmother.
Oh, yeah.
No, because she doesn't deal poison damage to you. She says you get a poison counter. Yeah.
No, so, I tried to make that deck.
Yeah. good start. The next, the flavor text on that card will be, Phyrexia shall rage against us, we will endure.
Oh, yeah. That's so good. Man, you should write the flavor text.
I just came up with that off the top of my head.
That was good.
Thank you. Are you done with cards?
I just have one more.
Okay, do that.
Mine is a legendary artifact creature called Memnarch.
Nice.
And he's really cool. I like him because he was one of the first, although not the first, artifact with colored activations. Because if you can pay some blue and turn a permanent into an artifact in addition to its other type, and then you can pay some more and gain control of a target artifact, so you can make something an artifact and get it. I guess that's how he got that avatar, the Kaldra.
Yeah.
And then his flavor text is pretty good. In the blur between metal and flesh, Memnarch found madness. And I talked about how much I like Memnarch before, and his flavor text, that's pretty interesting. But the main thing I wanted to bring up was his art is really bad. And for a really, really long time, I thought it was awesome. And one day, I really looked at it, and I realized that there's a little torso there, and that looks really dumb.
Mm-hmm.
So for years, for probably years and years, maybe a decade or more, I saw Memnarch. Try and follow me here. Take the card, get a picture of it, everyone, and kind of just squint your eyes.
And look at that big, that its head.
Yeah, just look at that as like an eyeless head.
It's awesome.
Yeah. And little kind of spindly arms coming out from under it.
Cool.
That is cool, right? And it looks like a giant spider thing. But then when you get closer, it's a little, like almost like
a
Mega Man villain, Dr. Robotnik or something.
So remember those? The Nirok had those funny glasses?
Yeah, he has those too.
With funny bulbous heads he's wearing. That. And then that eyeless head is actually just the top of his head.
Yeah, which like is so bad.
A big metal wart full of serum.
Yeah. It just depressed me so much because he was my favorite guy for a long time. And then I found out he actually looks really dumb.
Well,
and I've only recently recovered. I had to go to some support groups.
Did you recover?
And I'm doing a lot better now.
Wow. I wonder what even kind of advice anyone could give you for that. I wouldn't know what to say. I'd be like, sorry, dude, like, that's pretty awful. I'm with you.
Well, if you come to the Unitarian Church every Wednesday night at 7, you can get help with that.
Okay. Do they have a magic figure?
No. But, yeah, Memnarch was really cool because I really hate black villains because they're just done so many times over and over again. And this was, as far as I know, or at least the first blue villain that I was really interested in.
What about really Corona?
Cool. Yeah, she was all colors, though.
Loophole.
But I thought he was really cool because he wasn't like a black-blue villain. No, he was a real blue villain. He,
actually blue. Yeah.
Yeah, he used all of the blue philosophies and was actually villainous about it. I think you can make a villain out of any color, and people just automatically do it to black, which I think is just almost cliche at this point.
I mean, he's actually colorless, so which is why he couldn't be your general for a while.
That's true, but now he can.
Now he can, yeah.
He counts as blue, according to Commander.
Well, he lets you play blue cards, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, I don't like Memnarch because in a Commander game I played a couple weeks ago, he wasn't the general, but he was played, and he did steal a lot of my stuff. And in the online Classic Casual I was talking about, similar problem.
Well, he just outsmarted you.
He turned my stuff into artifacts and stuff. I'm not his friend. And he looks funny. He's got a big head. So, my last card is a cycle, which is the Smith's cycle from Scars of Mirrodin. Ember Smith, Life Smith, Mirror Smith, Pain Smith, Riddle Smith. We've got a Volshock. What's the green one again? Silvok. The Silvok. An Oriok, a Moriok, and a Nirok. And their flavor text is what I liked because they really... I mean, they're a good cycle, like, mechanically, but just in the flavor text, I like how it basically says, here's this human tribe in this color, and here's their philosophy. Like, the whole plane is metal, so the whole plane is about, like, artifice. So, the Volshock see the artificer as a catalyst, bringing the spark of creation that ignites change. And so each one of those flavor texts says... like, kind of defines a lot about how that color views artifacts, the plane, and themselves. So, that's why I picked that cycle and enjoy it. The Silvok see the artificer as a gardener preparing the world for hardy growth. Which I guess isn't true of all the Silvok, like Azuri. He isn't artificers or metal.
Well, when he used metalcraft, maybe so.
Yeah, on that day. Well, that just says brigade, I don't know.
That's true.
Like, I thought I knew what the word brigade meant, but when I saw Azuri's brigade, and it had metalcraft, I was like, well, maybe brigade actually means, like, stout opposers of, and I never knew. I actually looked it up just to make sure I wasn't going crazy, but it's still driving me crazy, so it didn't help. The Oriok see the artificer as a conduit, beckoning new creations into the world. That's kind of cheating because that card summons mirror tokens, but... And that's another interesting topic because the mirror used to be, like, Memnarch's spy cameras.
Right.
And now they're just... they just wander around. Well, and actually, I think they do, they're more important to Mirrodin now. Like, they kind of became, like, the lowest level of the ecosystem of Mirrodin, but also its little henchmen.
Yeah, maybe they're working for the Mirari.
Working for the Mirari? And Slobat has it?
Mm-hmm. He's coming.
Nice.
He got up out of his fall. His tumble. Tumble Down the Tangle.
What? That could be a song.
And whoever submits that song first gets a prize.
Tumble Down the Lacuna to the Core of Mirrodin. That could be part of it.
That's a good start.
So what do you think of the Mirrodin mechanics?
What do we have? Battle Cry?
Battle Cry, Metalcraft. See, even Battlecry is like, we're at war. That's our definition.
Yeah.
That's who we are. We're at war.
Metalcraft is kind of boring.
Yeah, it doesn't have a lot of flavor, like, other than Chromesteed, obviously. I don't know. I don't get it.
I don't know. I mean, their mechanics before in the first block weren't all that amazing either, aside from... equipment. That was the coolest one.
Right. And now we just take it for granted.
Yeah.
And it's not... I mean, it's not a bad thing that the mechanics aren't super dripping with flavor. Because...
Well, I like mine wet with flavor.
Yeah, and those are going to be awesome ones. But they're going to make... I mean, there have to be mechanics. And from a Melvin standpoint, like, the mechanics are going to be totally a different thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, they don't have to be, they don't all have to be perfect for Orthos. Because, I mean, Metalcraft does make sense. You know, you're drawing, gain strength from just being surrounded by artifacts. If you're from a metal plane, you know, that's what you want. You know, you might, maybe, you know, like, mages on Myrdan subconsciously draw power from artifacts. And so, if you were to summon them into a battlefield where you don't control any, they're just not at their potential.
So, here's a question. Do you think in action we'll see something like a Battlecry infect creature?
Ooh, I do not think that. But it's interesting that you would mention it.
We keep not having back and forth here, because I feel that same way. I think that would kind of defeat the all the mechanical and flavorful differences they've been building up.
Right.
Although it'd be in, maybe in the next Nostalgia set.
Ooh, yeah.
Next Planar Chaos 2.
Planar Chaos 2, I like it.
Color Pie Boogaloo? What you name that?
No, that's correct.
Okay.
That's what it would be called. So, do we have anything else to say about Myrdan?
Hopefully not.
Hopefully not. And let's,
yeah, now that Myrdan week's over, I can admit that Myrdan's kind of boring.
And once New Phyrexia comes, we won't have to trouble ourselves with this plane any longer.
Thank God. Or at least maybe only 20% of it.
Right. 20%, I guess, can happen.
If they follow the pattern.
Yeah. You know, though, 20% of a small set is not as significant as 20% of a large set, so.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
So, let's revisit our contests. You kind of posed a challenge and a contest to our listeners last episode.
I don't usually challenge things. I don't know what you... Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It was,
Just kidding.
During the break, you probably had a lot of free time. And during the break of last episode, David, you said people should let us know what they did during the break.
Yeah, and they would get a prize. We didn't find out until later that the break was only going to be 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Until after we're done recording it. Because of, what was that term you used?
Fair use.
Fair use. with songs. You only get really 10 seconds break. But, yeah, so we thought there might, we had a bigger break, but maybe you guys didn't have as long a break as we did.
I kind of cut the break down. You said you could hear me peeing anyway, so.
Yeah, it was good that you cut that. I could hear the cat folk in there, too. A little
bit. Shh.
But I did pick a winner of all of the entries. There was a lot this time.
Right.
It was hard for me to choose, but.
You narrowed it down.
Mm-hmm. And the number one response for what they did during their break last time goes to Homeowner.
Okay. What did Homeowner do during his break?
His or her response was, in my 10 seconds of break between halves, I destroyed some soul stones rather than hide them in the basement of my folks' home.
That, like, which references our talk about soul stones.
It works out so well. Which we butchered, I think.
Well,
Oh. And in 10 seconds, that was pretty good, especially since he's hiding it, or he or she is hiding them in his folks' home, since he owns his own home. I guess he'd have to drive there or go to his folks' home, since he's obviously, based on his name, a homeowner.
Right, he's a homeowner, but he keeps the soul stones
in his folks' house.
Yeah. So,
congratulations,
homeowner.
You're mentioned.
You got
the prize.
You got the prize, which is, we said your name. Be careful, David. Did you get infected?
I'm just so happy.
Me too. So, while you're recovering from that, our second contest, or maybe first contest, is our episode 3 topic, where we're taking submissions, ideas of what should episode 3 be about? At least one of the segments of episode 3 will be determined by a listener submission. We have 2.5 ideas submitted so far.
I should also mention it's episode 3 of Story Circle, not Star Wars, because I'm still trying to figure out what that's about.
I think that was also, like, a contest to decide what it's about.
Yeah, you can submit that, too.
And you'll win a prize, maybe.
I'm just glad I'm not the one who has to keep track of all these ongoing contests.
Are there a lot now? See, my trick is I'm just going to watch for what people submit to and then just assume we had a prize, like a contest about it.
All right, is it still too late to find new co-hosts?
No, I don't know. Maybe I should start looking.
Oh, burn.
Turned it around on you.
Impossible. In fact.
Impossible.
Oh, nice. We should have went with that.
It's with the Moriarty. They have a children's cartoon called Nimpossible.
Yeah.
So there's still time to submit your idea. There's no official cutoff. Basically, by the time we start wanting to prepare for episode 3, we'll look at the submissions and pick something. So we're not sure when that'll be. We're trying to go for every 2 weeks. We release one. This one's a week behind.
Yeah, you may have noticed I got a little sick.
Yes.
Put a wrench in the Mirrodin gears.
Right.
Yes. Or whatever that is.
Yeah, that's
the expansion symbol.
Right. Wrench in the expansion symbol. So, That's what she said.
Oh, yeah, that's a naughty one.
Well, the wrench in the expansion. And so, submit to the contest, and we might use your submission, and then you'll win the prize, which is an even bigger prize than usual, because we'd actually do a show topic on your submission. But I think that's it for episode 2.
Well, don't say that mentioning your name on our podcast isn't a great prize, because it is. Homeowner is going to be so happy.
He's probably stopped listening because he can't hear over his own tears of joy.
I think you're right.
So listen to episode 3 and find out who the winner was. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and we'll have a mystery topic next time. Just like action. Right?
Mystery topic. Action. Mystery. And our topic is a mystery. The third set in the block, episode 3, will be determined by the listeners. How's that?
Good.
All right, bye again.
Bye.
Huh. More of that strange oil. It's probably nothing.